right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again. It is the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, alongside Dom, as always. Dom, how are you?
I'm doing very well, and part of that is that we are very honored to be joined for this penultimate episode of the season by the godfather that Carl could only dream of being, South Africa's own Werner Joubert. Werner, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, what a great pleasure and joy to be on a podcast with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Werner, for people who don't know, was a contestant on the most recent season of Survivor South Africa. But Werner, apart from being a Survivor player, tell us a little bit more just about yourself and your own personal life.
So a little bit of background. I am a married man, married to my high school sweetheart. We grew up in the southern part of South Africa. Some people would maybe know of Cape Town. Mm-hmm. It was very close to Cape Town where I grew up. And then about 2013, we as a married couple moved up to the north of South Africa where we started a family. We've got a little boy and we adopted a daughter. So we're a family of four now. We have a Great Dane dog, part of a family. And then I am a full-time pastor at a Christian congregation in the town where we live. Although I originally studied to be a biokineticist. Now, I don't think that's a term that you guys are familiar with. It's almost like a physiotherapist. Do you have those over there with the sport teams?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, good read on us not being familiar with that term, by the way. You're right on the money there, but that makes sense. We understand it when you explain it in those terms.
Yeah, so a biokineticist is your typical last phase rehab before a person can typically function again on the sports field or actually in real life. So I started out in the medical field, and now I've been in the ministry for the last 8 years, and no, that's some background. I've been involved with sports, playing rugby. I think the guys these days in the U.S., they've got quite a good rugby sevens team.
I have heard that the U.S. rugby team just got like second place in some big tournament.
That's what we call sevens.
It's okay, seven sure. Aside.
and they've got seven players each team on a big field. Normally they have 15. And so the U.S. Just burst onto the scene and they started to do very well. And they are competing, competitive anymore. They're more than competitive. They almost took a title last weekend.
Yeah, that's amazing. So how did you, or I guess what inspired the transition from sports and medicine into the ministry?
Well, I don't know you guys' background, but just to from my world, from where I sit, so ministry is not so much a job, right? It's not so much something you just do when there's opportunity. There's a strong sense of a calling where you experience it in your heart, you know, that you want to minister in some sense. And it not always means that you become a pastor. It might be that on weekend you're involved with the kids' ministry or homeless ministry. There's all types of ways to express almost that sense of calling. But for me, what happened is when I just left school, I got an encounter with God where my life changed. And then only I started to study medicine. So for me, that's not, it doesn't work against one another, because you can live out what's in your heart, whether you're a doctor or a teacher, whatever, you know. But for me specifically, it just ended up that the way I was shaped for ministry was to lead a congregation, and so that's what I did.
Yeah, that's interesting. And how did you get into Survivor in South Africa? Do they air the U.S. version there?
They do, but it's a few seasons late.
Okay.
If you go on our national broadcast, so we've got a big broadcaster, Mnet, which does like all the live sports and typically the stuff where the US team and actually Canada and England have competed this weekend. But Mnet, which is like your big, I think you guys call it cable. Is it? It's cable. Is cable something you pay for, or is cable something everyone have?
Cable you pay for.
Okay, so Mnet is like our cable, right? But they're not the ones bringing us Survivor US. It's one of the smaller channels, South African Broadcasting Company, and they're about 4 or 3 seasons behind always. So it's been running, and someone can always engage with Survivor, but it's not as current, so we have to find it in other ways.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's like how we had to watch Survivor South Africa, was by finding 100. Sketchy internet streams, yeah.
So the interesting story, how do I get into Survivor, is I was a pastor for 1 year, 2011 or 2012, and someone said, listen, you have to watch this season of Survivor. We don't know whether you watch it, but there's this guy playing that's a believer. Right, as a man of faith, and he's trying to navigate his way through this game. And that player was Matt Elrod in in Redemption Island. And so that was the first season I got, and I binge watched it, and I'm like, oh my word, I need more, and I need to play. And then it all started.
So you may be the only person I've heard of who got into Survivor via Redemption Island, because if you speak to a lot of people, that is at the bottom of their list in terms of how they view various Survivor seasons. So for some people, they would say, if you were hooked in by that, then the sky's the limit. It's only going uphill from here. But I guess for you, there was this additional element in there that made it captivating beyond just the mechanics of the game.
Well, you're 100% right about, you know, you can only go up from there. But I also listened to you speak, Colin, and I think you were speaking to another lady. I just caught up on a few minutes on the podcast to get the feel. And I think she said that, you know, some people, they just love every season of Survivor. Mm-hmm. And that's true for me. Now, I know I can rank my seasons according to my preference. I do like some more than others, and I have opinions, but I really like Survivor. So, what can I say? I am a fan.
That's awesome. And as South African, Survivor South Africa became a thing, was that something you were applying for since it began, or was that something you got into later as well?
Well, it's an interesting thing. So Survivor South Africa season 1 to 5 has a different feel to it, and was also produced by a different umbrella company. Mm-hmm. And it used to be only 27 days, right? And the seasons were spread out over the years. So it started, for example, I think 2005, and then again 2008, and then 11, and then 14. That was the one I applied for, the first one I applied for, because that's after 2012. Well, I got into it with Matt Elrod and the boys. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like forgotten seasons. And then there was a group of super fans that applied for the rights to produce the show, South African men. And these guys, they're really super fans. I mean, they've got tattoos about Survivor and stuff. And then they got the rights, and they rebooted the whole feel to what you guys saw earlier this year with Survivor Season 6. There was a 4-year gap. And and they got it all the way to the place where you guys know about us and enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was a stellar season. And I would say to anyone who hasn't checked out Survivor South Africa, Werner's season is truly fantastic, and I will certainly be continuing to watch, albeit illegally online, for any future seasons going forward. It seems like they really have it figured out. Dom, what do you think about Survivor South Africa?
I would heartily echo that endorsement for Werner's season, and hopefully for future South African Survivor seasons as well. But so Werner, having come through the other side of that experience now as an alumnus, as a veteran, what has it been like readjusting to just watching other countries' versions of Survivor as a fan now? Has that been a difficult adjustment in a way?
It was difficult for me because, as you guys knew, as you guys saw, I got up to day 37 in our Survivor, and I mean, literally got kicked off a bus right near the end. And so you have to deal with disappointment of almost getting there. Now you've played, now you've seen the backstage of Survivor, and you're back at home, and Survivor starts to air again. And every time you hear that song, at the moment, for me, it was the start of Ghost Island, right? That was the first thing we got to see when we got back. You are reminded of, in the one moment that you played, but the headline is you did not win, for me. You know, you got kicked off so near to the end. So it was hard, almost again, facing that. But I forced myself to just get back into it and enjoy the game that I've come to love so much. But interestingly enough, I could not connect with Ghost Island. And I messaged, and it's funny because I know we're going to talk about this probably, one of the producers, and I asked him, listen, is it Survivor Blues I'm experiencing here? Or is there something about this season that's not clicking? And he said, there's something wrong there. He thinks it's not going to get a great rating. And so it turns out now with David and Goliath, yeah. So I got back into that. Survivor Australia, got into that.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it more than Ghost Island. And actually enjoyed New Zealand more than Ghost Island as well.
Let's touch on the Ghost Island thing quickly, because as your season and Ghost Island were airing somewhat concurrently a few months ago, there were a lot of people who were saying, okay, US Survivor maybe is in the doldrums at the moment. They didn't enjoy the previous season, 35, and now 36 seems to be losing its luster a little bit. But look at these amazing international versions, and particularly Survivor South Africa, which is just reaching new heights every week, it seems. And so people were setting up all of these really favorable contrasts between the current US season and your season, which was held up in really high regard. And now that we've moved on to firstly, just moved on in time. It's been a few months since then. But also now we have season 37, which people seem to be absolutely in love with. It feels like those comparisons are not really being made anymore. And it's almost like your season can stand on its own merits and it's not being used as this cudgel to beat the US version with.
Yeah, it's just out of this world to think of people across the oceans acknowledging Survivor SA after we had a four-year break, because I remember making contact with these people in the last 4 years, asking them, are we going to come back? Because what people don't know is in the previous one, I got very far in the casting. And we can't disclose everything, but to me, I had 1 foot on and 1 foot off. And at the end, I didn't go. And so I was waiting. The next year, will they open applications? And then there was nothing. 2015, nothing. 2016, and then at the end of 2017, it came through. So to hear you guys, you're even speaking with me, it's quite a great privilege. But I would say it would be very arrogant for us after one season, which people say is great, to say, hey, US should learn from us. I mean, these guys, they've not been around the block once, you know, and they stood the test of time. So I've got a great respect for Survivor US.
Yeah, that's definitely great to hear, although I would definitely advocate for the US. Obviously not dropping everything and adopting the identical South Africa model, because you're totally right. There, you don't get a show on primetime television on a network for 20 years by making a ton of mistakes over and over. But I do think there are certainly things that Survivor South Africa does outright better than CBS does. But that's neither here nor there. But one thing I wanted to ask about, going back to what you were saying, talking about watching this new season, I'm really grateful that we got you in here, particularly the week that Christian ended up getting voted out. Because on your season, I think it is not entirely unfair to say you were close. I don't think it's an identical parallel, but you were a bit of the Christian Hubicki figure of your own season. You were finding idols, you were making big moves, and at a certain point, everyone recognized what an obvious threat you would be if you made it to the end. When you watch someone like Christian in particular go down here, does that hit home even harder than it does for all of the other people who are now going through this experience? Or is it more just kind of a blanket admiration for what everyone in the cast is going through?
No, you know what? I could relate with him. And I'll tell you what's the hardest. I mean, you guys are fans. And I think you'll appreciate it hearing this from a fan being on the show. You know what's the hardest thing? It's seeing these people, and they're tagging you on the internet. And they're saying, you're playing such a great game. So awesome to watch you play. Wow, what a great move. And this thing picks up speed. And more people, just random messages. At the end, your phone cannot contain it. I mean, you have to find ways to eliminate notifications. And then you know there's going to be a day when you're going to break these people's hearts. Mm-hmm. It's so hard, you know. So I understand what Christian's going through.
It sounds like almost at that point, any kind of feedback or engagement can turn negative in a way, because if they're negative from the outset, if they're these people, these online haters who are flinging vitriol at you, then obviously that's not great and you want to cut those people out. But then also the people who are fans of yours, who are really positive and enthusiastic, you don't want to break their hearts and let them down either. So it's almost like you're in a no-win situation there.
Yeah, it's funny, but what happened in my world was quite interesting is I don't know how closely you guys watch, but the night I got voted off, the camera turned to Katinka, and she put her two index fingers below her eyes to make tears. And she said, "It's sad, but well done." Mm-hmm. Or "well done, but it's sad." It's something like that. And that's exactly what happened to me afterwards. Like a lot of people that was giving me heat, because they said, "We don't want someone to be so dominant. We don't want someone to take out, let's say, my favorite. He's an obvious guy because he's got idols." But the moment I was gone, these people said, "Now what?" You know, and then a lot of people contacted me and said, "Listen, we gave you a lot of heat, but actually, now that you're not there, we realize we love to hate you." So, you know, so yeah, it's interesting, a roller coaster.
When you're watching these seasons now that you've seen since you've actually gotten to play yourself, and you see people emerge into that kind of Christian role where they have become, it seems, the clearly biggest threat left in the game. Now, having been through that yourself, are you finding yourself saying, no, Christian, don't do that, like reliving your own kind of trauma when you see people go through this?
I do. And I saw it with Christian right after the merge, and I spoke to someone. I've been on a podcast with Ryan Brink, and I said, when just after the merge, they started to mention Christian's name, I told him what I feel for him, because the road towards the end is too long once they start mentioning your name right after the merge. How do you make it all the way? And it's out. You know?
Yeah, I think you're totally right that as soon as you have been identified that early as the biggest target, there's virtually nothing you can do other than finding an idol pretty much every single time. It seems like almost automatically someone is going to land in that role just by default any given season. But I don't know what, like, in trying to think about, I guess, what Christian potentially could have done differently, did anything stand out to you?
I was more thinking about the whole team of Davids, what they could have done differently. But Christian, I mean, I'm trying to think of specific things he has done. The thing about him is he is just such an interesting person in the way he speaks. and the stuff he says, that he will forever and always be different, you know? The way, I mean, he rocks up on a challenge and then he starts to speak to Jeff for hours. I mean, I'm not saying speaking should make you afraid, but he's just different. And so he stands out and then someone says he's different and then someone else says, but he's different, but he's so well-liked. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, so Verna, as your Survivor season was airing, we did a podcast about it, myself with a guest, and I was saying then that this guy Verna is really captivating, just the way he speaks, because he just has this way of conveying things that almost regardless of what he was talking about, you would want to listen. And so I guess in your day-to-day job, in your natural setting, then you're a pastor and the people who are listening to you, for them, whatever you're speaking about is the most important thing imaginable, right? It's the word of God. Yeah. So it's, you know, you kind of have that driving it forward. But even if you were just reading the phone book to them, it would still just be an interesting thing to listen to. And I think Christian has that same quality to him where you're just intrigued by him, even if what he's doing isn't itself that interesting.
Yeah, I think Christian's biggest problem was essentially 0% his own fault, and that is John Cochran and the job that he did in Karamoan, and people having seen that archetype crush a season before.
Yeah. 100%.
And so Verna, thinking,
sorry.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm just thinking lately, I don't want to sound arrogant, but look at the principle, grab the principle, but there will forever, there's many archetypes and there's many stuff going on, but there's two types of players for me, and two groups in one sense is the group you want to take with you to the end and the group you definitely don't want near the end. And I think that I will forever be in the one group, which means I will always have to fight my way towards the end because no one's going to help me there.
Right.
And if you look at someone like Christian, he'll never be a goat. So if he comes back, no, when he comes back, it's going to be soon. He needs to know that he's going to have to stack so many meat shields around him, because he's not getting taken to the end. You know what I did? The moment I came back from Survivor SA, I've got a feeling I'm going back. And the first thing I did is I did my my daily exercise in front of a TV watching Redemption Island, watching Boston Rob, keeping a group of people together and following him blindly, because I just thought, why couldn't I do it? And
Have you tried wearing that hat with a bee on it? I hear that's the key to tying it all together.
I would say the other issue is, yeah, I think you did an effective job of getting to the end with the best group of people who had the highest likelihood of being loyal to you and beatable. Yeah. But the problem was they just weren't nearly as stupid as so many of the people on Redemption Island were.
And I have to win Werner, Christian, Nick. In the world where there's no Final Four challenge, a fire-making challenge, right? Davey, Boston Rob, those players, we need to win at four, the immunity, because it's very unlikely. I mean, it's going through my head, Mike taking immunity when he has to, Jeremy. Did Jeremy win, take the immunity before Final Three at Game Changers? Oh, no, was it second chance, sorry. But in any case, I'm that fourth place guy. And I've got it's a fear and an opportunity that once I get to 5 and 4, I must win. You know, and that's the way it is.
It's interesting that you came to Survivor at a time. So you joined during Redemption Island, and then a few seasons later, you got to see Kim in One World playing maybe the most dominant game of all time. Oh. And so do you think that set your expectations for how Survivor could be played? Because if you look after that, we really haven't seen any winners in that kind of dominant mold recently. And I think part of that is because it's not that the people they cast are getting worse, even though like Kim is obviously historically talented and so on. But it's just that people don't roll over and die and let them do that anymore. And you see a lot of people like Jeremy, for instance, play a great game in his season. But that's he has some mistakes along the way, and he had people try to take shots at him, and he had to bob and weave around all of that. So he can't just lead from the front and expect people to fall in line and obey him anymore. And I guess you kind of ran into the same issue, right? Like, regardless of how good a game you played, eventually they were going to rise up and take their shot.
Yeah. So for me, the thing is, there's a type of leadership that I advocate for. And it's part of my faith window. You know, if I look at the life of Jesus, and I look at a life of leadership, a life of serving, and I put high value on that. And so, but for me, that's not a contrast within being a strong leader. So I know I can be strong, yet a gentle leader. I know I can have great vision, but yet do it in a serving way. And so what I try to do is I try to make myself invisible by taking this form of serving those people in my alliances. I'm constantly bringing water. So I'm never sitting there waiting to be served, maybe like called it a little bit. But then towards the end, so now I'm smelling it. It's day 36. You know you have to now break away. You have to now, you have to put a stick in the ground so that you can point back to it and show them what you've done. That was me playing the idol for Jean, sending Katinka home. But it's so close to the end. At that moment, you have to explode. You know, and come out. And when I came out, I was out, and then I could not win that last challenge. So, but here's the interesting thing. People in the opposite alliance, they pointed to me as the threat 15 days earlier. But my own people said, no, this is just Farish. We're working together. Because I can disarm myself with those I work with, but from the outside they knew, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it makes for a better season or a better TV show to watch for the viewers when you do have that dominant player who has to fend off all these attacks, or is it better with an ensemble cast where you have a more even playing field like this season, arguably, where it feels like there are always three or four people who are vying for control at any given time?
I think there's three stories, three different ways this go, and the one I do not prefer. The one is where I just don't care so much for any character, and we're at Final Eight, and I'm not sure where this is going, because the playing field is even, but it's evenly weak, all right? In my head, I'm trying to look for a season here. But then there's one or two strong people. And that's one type of story. It's like everyone trying to get them out. And I can buy that story. And then there's the story where there's multiple people going at it. And that's a different type of story. And I'll go for any one of two and three. But at the moment, I don't know how often we have seen such a strong end game cast like this. And I'm enjoying this right now a lot.
I think pretty much everyone is on board with that. It really does seem like the more kind of compelling characters they can throw at us, and compelling winner candidates, I think, is a big factor as well. People that you can genuinely buy and be rooting for and still believe in, I think, is huge. And this season really seems like an historic kind of exception in that department. And I'm really excited about what that could hopefully mean for the rest of Survivor going forward. But one thing I'm really interested in hearing your take on, you know, as you mentioned, you've certainly had your share of hidden immunity idols and made some creative kind of moves with the various twists and advantages within the game. What do you think about just how many there are in the U.S. version? Like in this new episode, we get two entire segments devoted to Davey finding this new idol, and it seems like that's happening every single week here. What do you think about the difference it makes in the game to have these new kind of twists going in? It seems like at least one a week.
Yeah. And we also had quite a lot, if you think about it. I had two, PK found one, Palesa found one, then found another one. And I said this even at our live reunion. For me, I play with idols only because I have to, only because it's there. I don't like it. Because my strength is once I get a group together, I dominate because I work well with my group. But what idols does is it's the whole Wentworth moment. One idol, 9 votes, or however it was, 8 votes. An idol messes with the game of Werner. Okay? And so what I need to do is I need to get my hands on those idols, get them in my bag, and try not to play them so that they don't pop out again on the show. So I enjoy seeing it. But as I see it, I'm like, man, when I play again, I don't want idols to run around everywhere because I want more control, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, shocking that Redemption Island really resonated strongly with you. But what did you think of Davey, who I'm totally with you. I think it is far past, frankly, the point that I am comfortable with the number of idols and advantages that go in every season. But if they are going to keep doing this, I really did like the twist where Davey's idol that he gets this week expires after just one round unless he wants to gamble and risk his vote. And we saw something similar on Ghost Island last season. Yeah. But what did you think about Davey and his decision not to gamble and to just make sure he gets the idol that is only good for one round? Did you think that was the right move?
I thought so. It got me for a moment because it did say if you lose the whole guessing game, you lose your vote, but you do have your idol, right?
I believe that is correct.
I believe that's correct as well. But what I would do is I would just take the idol and I would say thank you very much.
Yeah.
Because losing my vote complicates stuff. Now I must go and tell a majority, which he doesn't have anymore, but which he possibly had. Oh, this is the reason I don't have a vote, this and this. It's too complicated when you're sitting pretty and you definitely have an immunity idol. I'll take the idol with me, put it in my pocket. I'll say, is there any food here? No, there's no food. Okay, bye. I'm going back to the camp.
Yeah, especially when you still have an immunity challenge coming up that you, if you're Davey, you can feel at least okay about your chances of winning. And then if you have that necklace and an idol that you can use that round, that you must use that round, essentially, that's a really compelling prospect. But Dom, is there some hipster edgelord reasoning to take this gamble that we're all overlooking?
Not as far as I can tell, especially as the way that Davey drew it up and the way we all thought this was going down 10 minutes into the episode, it felt like it was going to be 4 versus 3, right? That this ragtag bunch of Davey and Christian and Kara and Allison was going to get one over on Nick and his friends, and it was going to be by this very narrow margin. So if Davey gives his vote up and now it's 3-3 and there's a tie or something, that blows the whole thing up. So, yeah, I think you don't take the gamble, you play it safe, and I think Davey made the right call. I'm curious, Werner, what you think, though, about the way that Davey approached this decision, because we see him almost praying or kind of hoping for some like divine intervention with this decision here. And we see this from time to time on Survivor when obviously it's a very trying experience and people want some kind of spiritual comfort or they're trying to get this extra burst of motivation before a challenge. But in this case, it's not like Davey himself has to do anything extra or do anything different. It's just hoping that someone upstairs is going to rig the dice in his favor a little bit.
Yeah, so for me, as a pastor, you know, we believe and lead and guide people, encourage people to have this living relationship with Jesus. All right. Not, oh, come to church, go back home, tick the box. So nominally on a form, I am now considered a Christian. No, we believe there's a relational aspect there that's very important. And what that does is it just opens your world to say, hey, I can talk to God in my car. I can talk to him when I go for a jog. I can ask him at work for guidance. And so Davey asking for me is a beautiful gesture. Of course, there's this whole idea that people start to think that God is like a genie, you know, that will come up and perform for you, which is not. But I rather have people say, hey, I'm gonna engage my relationship with God. I'm gonna ask him stuff. I'm gonna talk with him and have faith that he is gonna engage me. So you know what? I'll give it a thumbs up.
Okay. I'm curious, just quickly while we're on it, to me, it seems one season in particular has had by far the most kind of religious overtones in the kind of narrative and the alliance building. That was South Pacific, where Coach came back for the third time. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
What was your take on seeing that and seeing religion be kind of the foundation of that alliance?
So for me, short answer, not so great.
That's understandable, frankly.
Well, you see me do it. I'm not saying the way I do it is right, but you actually knocked the words out of me because I'm trying to find the perfect answer here. My faith is more important than anything in this world for me, right? But one must also watch out not to make it plastic and push it out there to be like a poster on a wall. You know what I'm saying? I'm very aware for alienating people that's not Christians. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I don't want to have a great conversation with them and engage them. But it often hurts people if you ignore that they are there and carry on. So even on my season, there was a lot of religious talk, and these people did not know I was a pastor. They did not make the camera, though. But I would go to some of these people, which I knew were not Christians, and I would ask them the next day, listen, how did you feel when this conversation came up? Now, they didn't know I'm a pastor, but it shouldn't matter in any case. And I would make sure that they were okay, and if they had any questions, then I could address those, not in a big group and almost say, but you know what, the way you're looking at it is wrong. But I could say, you know what, I differ from you, and here's why. So I am quite sensitive when it comes to the, let's call it the pulpit moment or the group moment. Everyone is here, everyone is listening. That can harm people, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and frankly, I think there were plenty of instances on that season, at least the way it was depicted, where religion may not have been used in the most noble of ways, and that probably is not going to sit well with the people who are taking it more seriously.
Yeah, 100%. And now, okay, so I come from this whole last 6 years of playing rugby most weekends, right? So what you do is you play against these people extremely hard. You tackle, it's physical. You know, just imagine American football, a very tough game. It's Drew Brees doing his thing. It's blood and everything. But then afterwards, you get these two people from opposite teams shaking hands. Okay? And that's how I see Survivor. That's why I don't get too emotionally overwhelmed in making hard decisions on the game. It's only a game. But now you must watch out if you start building relationships on faith, which is my most important thing. And you know what? I will die for people I know when it comes to faith. I really will. Now you bring faith in there. You start taking their hands publicly in front of everyone. And now when you play against them, they come back afterwards and said, now you said we really had a spiritual bond. And now I understand that your faith is empty, because the way I feel right now if God makes a person feels like this, then I want nothing to do with him. So one must navigate very, very sensitively when it comes to this. I had very deep religious chats with some of these people, but I also said, I want you to know and understand that what you mean to me as a person, it's got nothing to do with whether you play with me or play against me. That's easy to say, but I really look at it that way. That was a lot of stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was really well said, and I think makes a lot of sense and was really insightful. And I don't know how to coherently transition from there into anything unrelated.
I'll pick up the torch and run with it, see what I can do. So I guess the next thing that does happen in the episode is Nick has this very clever ruse that he's come up with where Yeah, so I'll set the stage here quickly. He's going to have this fake idol that he's made. I'm not quite sure what with. There's a lot of like cloth and random stones and stuff lying around. So I'm sure he can get his arts and crafts going and fashion something pretty nice and realistic looking. But either way, he's come up with this fake idol. And his plan is he's going to hide this in the raft where he knows these discussions are going to take place. And then when they're having this powwow over there, he's going to magically find it and everyone's going to know that he has at least one and possibly a second idol too. So Werner, it struck me watching this, knowing that you were coming on this week, that you were almost in the opposite situation on your season where you had two idols. Ideally, you wouldn't want everyone to know about it, but there were several people who knew about one of them, and when they started comparing notes, they realized that they couldn't possibly be talking about the same idol. So eventually word got around that you had to have two almost by accident because people just kind of pieced it together.
Listen, can I just tell you the funniest of stories and then bring me back on track, all right? So what happens is I find I had a confrontation with Martinez on the beach early in the game. That's a different character. And
I remember.
Martinez is a very different character. That's certainly true.
Would you like to see him on Survivor World Edition?
Yes, for sure.
Absolutely. But as long as he doesn't play for Africa, that's all right. So what happens is he one day wakes up and he says, I believe Werner's got an idol. Because what happens is the one day everyone looks for an idol and I'm sleeping. It's like, but I'm always working. I'm always getting stuff, water, wood. What happened is actually the very first day I found a clue, right? You remember? And then I ate the parchment. So no one will forget that one. So I didn't find an idol, right? But I did find a clue. So Martinez comes to me, he says, I believe you have an idol. I believe you have an idol. I said, Martinez, I really don't have. By then, the next day would be the challenge where I really get an idol. But in his mind, he's so convinced I have an idol that he tells Marushka, Werner's got an idol. Then that day, when I find the idol, I jump from that little beam or that beam at the challenge. You remember, I get the idol. Someone says, we saw that. I said, I know. Everyone saw it. Done. That's my first idol. Okay. The next day, we shuffle, or 2 days after that. And Marushka goes to a tribe with Tom, Vusi, and Palesa. And she says, guys, Werner's got two idols. He found one the first few days, and then he found a second one when he jumped off the pole. But actually, I only had one idol at that moment. But then after that, I really find a second idol. And when I get to the merge, Palesa and Vusi comes to me and say, we know you have two idols. And I'm like, how do they know? But they were accidentally right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, hey, you should have pulled one out of the raft and then you could have gotten three.
Yeah, sorry, I took us on a detour there.
Well, no,
my feeling with what he did, the moment when he did it, my wife said, what is this guy doing? I said, wait, it's genius. I would do exactly what he did, okay? I would take the idol, and now I've got two idols, okay, according to them. But I would immediately go and gather my closest three idols, alliance member. Sorry. I only have two idols. I would gather my closest three alliance members and I would say, guys, this is what I did. We have 2 days to find the real idol. So I'm building trust with him and I've got the opposing alliance back in the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Managing truth is everything. At the moment someone says something about me that I hope only I knew, I would quickly gather my own alliance and be the first one to narrate that story. But I would also do what he did. Because firstly, you get them sitting in the shelter and your alliance can find the real one. And then secondly, they believe you've got two idols. So you just tell them before tribal, listen, guys, I know it's a game, but I just want to let you know I'm playing one of my idols. I've got two. I'm playing one tonight, just so you know, and I won't play it. Because I would have a target on me in any case, and he does. So make it pretend you've got another one. I can run with that. But you must chat to Davey. Don't leave him to hear about this idol, Nick, from someone else. That's what broke him.
Yeah, we know that Nick is a bit of a trickster. He likes to have fun and just get in people's heads. So that could be the entire motivation by itself. But thinking about the long-term thought process here, I was wondering if he's looking towards the end where he realizes, okay, we're at 7 people left now. The idols typically are battled through final 5. And then when we get to final 4, you can either win your way there or you can win the fire challenge. So you've got 2 shots to get your way into that final 3.
Yes.
Potentially, if he has 2 idols, or so other people think, then he only has to win 1 challenge in that stretch from 7 to 5 to guarantee his place in final 4, and then he has 2 shots to get to final 3. And it's very hard to take a shot at him before then if you think he has 2, because there's a good chance he's just going to play one, and you're going to be out of luck. He might be thinking, if this gets around and that news is out there, he's cementing his place in that final 4 just by default. But then, on the other hand, you get this like James Clement kind of thing where when people know that's a situation, they know this is the last chance that they have to take you out. And so they have to make it happen now. And so we see Nick almost forces himself to have to play the idol, which if he hadn't done this whole clever ruse, then maybe he wouldn't have had to anyway. So I don't know if it really accomplished anything, but I love the gumption involved in going through with it. And you can tell for everything that Davey said, I think it's because Davey knows Nick so well that he can see through him, but everyone else seems to be lapping it up, and Nick is the kind of guy who can just lie to your face and you'll believe it a lot of the time.
And I'm not saying it worked out well at all. What I'm saying is the whole idea at the RAW for that moment, you see those people when he takes out the idol, they're hugging one another, they're laughing. For them it's a real moment. And we have seen many occasions where someone's on the chopping block and then they pretend to have an idol. Now they're walking on the beach, they're putting a rock in their bag or something, and then everyone's laughing at them. But now here this guy actually pulls it off. And then for a moment they really believe he has a second one. But how he plays it after that messes him up.
When you said earlier, and I think anyone who has watched your first season would be on board. You seem like someone who, if Survivor South Africa were to do a season with returnees, I'm guessing you would be in the mix. And it seems like you are aware of that. Like I think you said, as soon as you got home, you recognized I may have another chance at this. With that in mind, and given your experience gathering these idols, have you learned anything between playing yourself and watching these subsequent seasons that would lead you to do anything substantially different with idols potentially your second time around?
I have, and I will.
Okay.
Definitely.
Enough said.
Okay, definitely. Fair enough. All right.
And I will tell you after the podcast.
Okay, excellent. Perfect. And then we will auction that information off to the highest bidder. No, I'm just kidding. We would never do that to you, Werner.
I thought you were going to say you're going to tell us in a few years after you come back and win your second season. But that works too. As long as I get to find out, it's all good.
Yeah. I guess let's talk quickly about this reward challenge where Davey ends up winning, and he is in this kind of classic Survivor conundrum of, yes, you have won the reward, but now you need to pick people to come with you. Forgive me for not remembering too clearly, but Werner, were you ever in this position yourself, and how did you handle it, if so? Or how would you have handled it?
Yes, the one where I had to choose was actually the loved one's visit.
Oh, wow, yes.
Now, the interesting thing is I knew I'm not going away with a minority that day. So I won the challenge, and Nico said, choose someone. Now, we're only six people there at that moment. And no, I'm lying. Sorry, we're five. Okay? He says, choose someone else, and I choose Katinka. If it was that, I would have swapped myself out. Back into a majority, because I'm not leaving a 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then he says, choose one more person. And they allow me to take a majority to a reward. And I'm like, I'm going nowhere, taking the majority with me. So yeah, I have been in that position. And this day, again, I relived it. And the only thing I saw is, don't win your way into a minority. It is dangerous. But you're very hungry guys out there. You literally, when they mention those foods, it's like there's an animal instinct. But winning your way into a minority can be your downfall.
Okay. So if you won an earlier reward into the game where you had to make that decision, you would give your spot up?
Well, let's say, looking across the field, as someone who's played, my advice would be that there's times where you have to give your spot up to preserve your game. And it's not going to be nice because you're going to be hungry. But there is those moments. But there's also moments when you don't have to, like when you can win and take a majority with you.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
Or if they break it even, you know, and that's fine. But we need to be awake as players that a reward like this. Oh, Brenda? Remember Brenda?
Right, yeah, Brenda, Dawn and Brenda.
Well, Brenda actually, here's a perfect example. What Brenda did wrong was not swapping herself out of the reward. Brenda's big mistake was she had the power to go with a majority. And so she switched herself out of the majority and out of the loved one's visit and out of the game. It's about the majority, not about who goes where, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I remember vividly the first time they did a reward where the winner got to take a majority of people with them was the final five in Survivor Philippines. And we did a podcast that week where we both agreed that allowing someone to win a reward and bring what will become a majority with them is so good it shouldn't be allowed. That shouldn't be part of the game. When you win the individual reward, it should always be to bring along a minority of people.
Yeah. But that person will argue, I worked for
sure,
that.
Yeah.
And you know, if that person is Angelina, she's going to like open the bidding with Jeff to try and discuss terms for taking one more person on the thing or trying to find something out that way. But you brought up the loved ones visit, and we had that last week, and I was not here last week to offer any hot takes there, and I'll keep those in the oven for now. But do you find, as someone who you were out there, you had a loved ones visit yourself, do you find that it does a lot to recalibrate people's perceptions of the game as it stands? Because we saw in your season, like Tom, for instance, the whole question of like loyalty to you and to other people, he really had to reconsider that when the fact of this is the one person I'm the most loyal to in my entire life is here staring me in the face. So the entire concept of loyalty has to mean something a little bit different there. And just in general, it feels like whenever the loved ones visit comes into play, there's always this sense of like you get a much more objective view of where your place in the game is, because you have someone who knows you almost better than you know yourself sometimes coming in to be this perfect sounding board who you can trust implicitly, and they help you to work through all of those contradictions in your own head, I guess.
Yeah. The loved one's visit was part of the rise of Tom and Katinka, although I managed to get Katinka out with that idol move. But both of the people I took on loved one's visits, their loved ones told them, you cannot go with this guy that just met me. Mm-hmm. And since then, it was playing. And then the next tribal, I play my idol for Jean, which is then the one also that plays against me. So there's no favors in this game, I'll tell you that.
There sure weren't in South Africa, at the very least. Angelina has come up, and I'm very interested in hearing what you just think about Angelina as a player and the role that she's played on this season so far.
Oh, you're putting me under the bus here.
I'm not. No, I'm leaving this open-ended.
There's two sides of Angelina. The side I admire is the fight in this girl to be a part of this game. She's a Goliath. Maybe she does not need to fight so long for money. I don't know. I'm making a wild assumption. But the fight that she shows to be in this game as a fan, that's why the game of Survivor is still alive. She wants to play. But her neediness is very apparent. And as a player, that would put me off a lot if I played.
Yeah, I think you may be on the money with her not maybe needing the money as much. But duality of Angelina, I found fascinating all season, and I love that whenever she does something that seems to be the sincere gesture, or that's how she wants it to be perceived, she always has the receipts ready to go, just in case there's a time to break it out and get some currency for it. So we saw this episode, despite her saying several times, well, I really don't want to bring this up, but I feel obliged to under the circumstances. Yes. You know, she was hoping to get a little bit more in terms of payback or feedback from that Rice deal. And I think with Angelina, we've said before that she's alluded to it herself. She operates in this very corporate environment where often she has to work and make a case for herself to get heard and to get respect. And I think she's carrying that mentality into Survivor. And so, yeah, if she was going to ask for a raise, for instance, or if she was trying to seek out a certain opportunity, she would have to make this case for herself. And if she had done this thing that she thought deserved credit, then of course you would mention that and bring it up and try and frame it in the best possible light.
Yes.
But then if you do it on Survivor, if you're not already respected by other people, then it becomes one more thing that they can use against you because you're insincere and you're shifty and so on and so forth.
Yes. Yes. And I work and our congregation, if by some other weird reason you Google my town, Secunda, I think it's got the largest or the second largest industrial plant in the world. Okay, we make petrol and diesel, right? Fuel, and they're actually opening up a big thing in America as well. So our town is built around professional people that gathers here to make. We've got the best financial consultants. Organizing that, we've got the best engineers, we just have the best people to come here and make gazillions liters of fuel. And so when these people are in boardroom mode, I work with them, they know how to put personal stuff aside and literally talk about stuff, but in a quite confrontational way. But they start to play with the pieces they have. This is what we said in this meeting. This is what we decided. This is what I said I would do. This is what I did. And sometimes we need to train these people how to work with the elements of humans, feelings, emotions, seeing a distrust or observing in a room how someone gets hurt when something they said got pushed away. Now Angelina comes with the corporate, with her corporate stuff. You know, I remember what I did with Arise, and she's 100% correct, but the boardroom talk doesn't translate so well in this game. because you are dealing here with emotions, feelings, trust. Do people feel safe? If you compete with me the whole time, if you consistently tell me in Survivor what you did, I am reminded you're trying to say you're better than me, and then I don't want to sit next to you. I don't want to play with you. So, yeah, it's about changing it up from stuff to people, and it's not an easy thing to do if you're programmed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something where you either have that on day one of Survivor or you don't. That's not something that you're going to get much better at over the course of a season. I think that has a lot to do with, frankly, the way you are in real life, which is not generally the case for most kind of things. Like, I think most aspects of Survivor you are able to quickly improve at, but that would be one such counterexample. Werner, we saw this week Mike White ended up winning the immunity challenge. It was the ball balancing challenge that maybe you even played yourself. I feel like we've seen that challenge all over the place. But one thing I was really interested in, and I'm surprised we don't hear more about, frankly, from immunity winners, is Mike got to talk a bit about, now that he had the necklace on his neck, it made him feel way more secure in trying to pull off a big move that night. I believe you won at least one immunity on your season, if not more than that. Did you get that same kind of sense on the nights where you had the necklace yourself?
Yes. For me, I just translated that whole thing a little bit different. I was in a majority alliance, and we were driving towards the end. So there was no crazy moves needed for me to pull off, right? Like, here, you see this playing field. You don't know which way they're going. For us as an alliance, it was quite clear what we wanted to do. But whenever I got immunity, it placed me in a healthy space in my mind. I do not do well when I'm off balance emotionally, because I'm struggling to find balance, and I might talk too much. I might not talk to you because I want to talk to that person. But the moment I center, if I can call it that, I'm safe, breathe. I start walking in the camp and I chat with everyone. I connect with you. And it's almost like I hear better, because there's no element of stress, if you know what I'm saying. So that's how I channeled my immunity status, which I had on two occasions, and then the one I had the idol, well, two idols to play. So I was not in a great space the night I was voted off, because I felt extremely naked. But yeah, I would not use it to be cute, but there was one of two of the players on my season when they had the necklace. I could see they're losing a grip, because they're trying too much weird things, you know?
Mm-hmm. So would it almost be potentially a negative in your mind to get too far into that kind of mindset?
Well, for me, it would be a positive, because I would just help. I would allow it to help me focus. But for some people.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I meant for the other people, for the Mike Whites, yes, and whoever else. Yeah.
Well, maybe White Mike handled it well, but for some people, that false sense of security, and it's a false sense because it only lasts for one day, shows you a side of them which people then see and say, listen, we need to get this guy off, mm-hmm. You know?
Okay.
What I did with my time, with the only thing I was trying to do at that moment was to constantly frame an alliance within the majority alliance. And I used the time just to manage as people in the alliance, are they starting to pick up that there's a tight three within the alliance or not? So I would play that game and being at ease while having immunity around my neck.
What do you think about Mike White overall and where he fits into this season?
I think he looks like Benjamin Linus from Lost, and I love it.
If Benjamin Linus didn't have a razor out there on that island. Yeah, that's a great call. Yeah, are you? Do you like it when they have the kind of Mike White level celebrities on the show, like Lisa Welchel or like Jeff Kent, or would you rather have it just be regular civilians?
No, put them on there. I don't know how a big name Mike White is in America. I can understand Jeff Gant, you know, when you wiki him, then you see, okay, the guy, you know, played pro baseball, he must be great. I'm not sure. Is he quite a large celebrity status there?
I mean, Mike White is someone people would know, most people roughly our age would know some of his work, but would not know if they saw Mike White on the street. They wouldn't even think to stop
him. That's him, yes. No, put them on, but don't give them special privileges. Like with the previous South African season, they had one guy being a captain, who was a Springbok rugby captain, and then they had the Springbok football or soccer captain on the other side. And these guys were coaches of the teams, and they could not be voted off, but they also could not win. It was a very weird thing.
That is if weird.
That's very weird. At the end, they both had one vote, and they played individual immunities against one another to cancel votes out. South Africa had actually quite a good cast the previous season, but this thing wasn't great. If they come to play the game, let them play. Let them play. I don't think you should stack a whole lot of them and necessarily call it always something like celebrities, plebs versus celebs, or contenders versus champions. It worked for Aussie, but just bring one or two and let them play the game.
Okay. I think that's very well reasoned. Another thing I would really like to hear your take on, especially considering how interested you seem to be in Nick and how genius his move was on the raft with the idol. What did you think about Nick putting the fake idol into Jeff's hands at first when it was travel council and time to play an idol, and then going back and getting the read on the group?
Now, for me, the moment at the raft was great, and then it went downhill from there. From episode with Nick. No, I didn't like it. Wasted his idol. So, firstly, you could say, with all the shenanigans, he misplayed his idol. In other words, he could not read the group well. And that's why he lost his idol. So, when he said, I'm walking, and he said these words, I'm walking to get a read. He shouldn't have said that, but when he said that, I thought, that's smart what you are doing, just not what you are saying. So he actually thought about it. So execution, 2 out of 10. Idea, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I actually, last week when Christian sat there and said, Jeff, give me a second, I want to get a read on this situation. In last week's podcast, I said, that's close to the right thing to do, but what you should do is go up and hand Jeff the idol, and then you will get the real reaction, and then you can decide whether or not you want to play it. And I was blown away when we saw Nick go do that exact thing this week, although I had the exact reaction you did, Werner, and I tweeted something to the effect of, like, memo to people trying to get reads on future players, don't announce that you're trying to get a read before you get the read. Yeah. Go and just do it, and then you will, people, when they know that they are you're trying to get a read on them, are going to be a lot harder to read. And I actually thought
I'm gonna jump in here because I have a contrarian take on this. Okay. as one might expect. So it is an easy thing to say that, oh, well, of course you shouldn't tell them that you're looking for a read, and it's easy to farm retweets off of that. However,
how dare you? That only got like 4 retweets, so don't worry about it.
So I get the sense that Nick, before he said that, has already tried to get a read on the group. He goes up there, he hands the idol over, he turns around, he tries to read the room. He tries to gauge reactions on people's faces and how they're acting and body language and so on. And then when he says, I'm playing this, I'm trying to get a read, that's trying to get like a second order reaction. That's seeing if making this explicit and applying this additional pressure is going to cause anyone to wilt under that pressure and to maybe give away something that they shouldn't. And it's going to be, okay, I've already tried to get a sense of these organic reactions to what I just did. Now, if I turn up the pressure a little bit and let people know they're under the spotlight, is someone going to show something that maybe they shouldn't?
Well, I thought that's what was happening, is we see when he says that, Angelina says, no, I don't think you need to play it. I think you're good. And I thought that was the classic kind of weak means strong, strong means weak. Her trying to like second level Nick into not playing it now that it looked like he was about to. And when he then decided to play it himself, I thought Angelina just absolutely blew it for everyone. And I was ready to throw my laptop through the TV, but it ended up that he didn't get a single vote against him. So that was good to see him, I guess, burn the idol there or waste it or whatever you want to say. But I certainly was thinking that that was going to go differently. And in Nick's situation, when Davey gets up and plays his idol and you know that there go two votes with this group of five, we've split the vote between Christian and Davey, and now the votes against Davey aren't counting. If one person within that group has some kind of backup plan that I'm not in on at my expense, I understand Nick wanting to just take the guarantee of being there the next morning to wake up at dawn and have, it seems like a 50-50 shot at finding the next idol that goes into the game. Yeah. Dom, I guess, what did you like him ultimately choosing to play it for himself, given the context, or was that a misplay in your view?
For Nick or for Davey?
For Nick. I don't think Davey one is a total no-brainer as far as I'm concerned.
Well, so as I was watching, I was thinking, wait, is Davey going to like give it to Christian again and then end up getting voted out himself or something? I thought that was seriously on the table.
I thought it was on the table, but I don't think that should be on the table in Davey's shoes.
Right. I mean, so often we say, oh, it seems so weird that they're playing an idol here or not playing an idol, when clearly, based on what we've seen as viewers, we can see all the pieces coming together. This time around, we didn't even get that. We were confused as to what was going on. So it's hard to fault anyone for just wanting to guarantee themselves that safety and play it and just get themselves three more days to reevaluate. And hopefully everything will shuffle out in a simpler way going ahead.
Right. That's essentially what it would have come down to for me, is I would guess that Nick wouldn't have even played it had Davey not gotten up and played an idol that Nick had no idea, I assume, even existed at that point. So I'm not going to hit Nick too hard for that.
So Colin, I'm curious if you think this comparison is on point, but this reminds me of like the Michaela boot in Game Changers when...
Sure, no, I'll take your word for it.
No, when none of them had any idea what was going on, we didn't have any idea what was going on. And so we left the episode feeling a little unsatisfied because nothing they could stitch together to explain the vote really made any sense. So if you think back to last week, in the Next Time on Survivor segment, it seemed like it was going to be pandemonium from start to finish. We had everyone's name, except for Kara's, interestingly, and we'll come back to that, getting thrown out, including Nick's for the first time. And we did get that in the end, but it was all compressed into that 5-minute stretch before Tribal Council in this seeming effort to build up some suspense and throw all these decoys out there. Because it felt like it was going to be a confusing but maybe straightforward vote, and then suddenly all these names get thrown around and no one has any clue anymore, and then two idols get played and it's 3-2-2 somehow and no one can make any sense of anything. And we're recording this Thursday early afternoon our time, so we haven't been able to like rewatch the episode or try and read these interviews and really parse together what's going on. So we're still in this state of complete and utter confusion. Verna, if you can shed any light on any of this, and by all means jump in and let us know. It's hard to analyze what went into this vote and everything behind it, because I don't think they knew either, and I don't think they will know until they get back to camp, and that's what we're going to see in the finale, by which point, you know, that'll be long in the past now.
To me, it just seemed like they recognized this is our cleanest look at Christian we've ever had and may ever have, and Davey's going to be the backup. And that's essentially, at the end of the episode, how I came away reading that. Werner, did you get the same kind of sense that the other five were just splitting the votes between Christian and Davey?
Yeah, 100%. And remember, Davey's idol was only for one tribal council,
right?
So he had to play it. That makes sense. So if there was a way in which Davey and Nick and even Christian picked up that there was people migrating to the other side, and I was Nick, I would also play my idol. Just get me to the beach, because it was such pandemonium just before Tribal. I mean, it was Survivor, Russian Roulette. I mean, everyone's name came up. Get me back to the beach tomorrow morning. Let me wake up there, breathe, and take it from there.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like at every single one of these votes, at least some part of that kind of philosophy is in the air. Like this season in particular, Davey talks about this at the most recent tribal council, about how fluid the dynamics are and how it's voting blocks, voting blocks, voting blocks. I know in hearing you talk about the way you would like to approach the game and that you did approach the game, you were someone who was big on team building and so forth. How do you feel like you might adjust if you got off, if you found yourself on a season where it was full of players who were more interested in voting blocks? Would you still try to keep one group loyal, or do you see yourself going more with whatever everyone else is into?
So I think my strength is selling a vision, and in the vision, communicating safety. For me, the David tribe did exactly what they should not have done. 2 weeks back, they come together, they align, everyone puts their advantages on the table and say, this is for us. They work so hard to get the Goliath out, another one, and then they disintegrate into voting blocks. Almost unnecessary. You know what? I wonder if sometimes when people play in an alliance that works, if they don't get bored. And you have to fight boredom. And so what I did, literally myself, is to constantly engage and show vision, communicate safety, show vision, communicate safety, to keep the group together. And we were four all the way to the final four, and then it was every person for itself. Maybe not always the best television, but for me, that's proper survivor play, within my own skin at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the good news is over in Survivor South Africa, you guys are only on what, like season 6 or 7 now at this point? And so yeah, it could be a little while before you get an entire cast full of people out there looking to switch up every vote, every single round, seemingly just for fun, like the way at times it seems like this group may be doing. But yeah, to go back to Dom's initial question, it really just seemed to me like this vote came down to Christian is the biggest threat. We finally have a clean shot at him. We may not have another one. And how could we not take this opportunity now, even with other variables in the game like Nick and however many idols he may have, or however much of a challenge threat Allison may be? I feel like the group just essentially came to the conclusion that none of us can afford to let Christian wake up here tomorrow morning on the beach. And I think based on the way things had played out to that point, I can't blame them the way it's been presented on the show. It seems like Christian certainly was quite a threat indeed out there. But that is unfortunately going to be the end of the line here for Christian.
And just to jump in on that, because I wasn't here last week to offer thoughts on it, but there was some criticism of Gabby for taking that shot at Christian too early, when to me, I was wondering if it was maybe too late, if anything. Like, it felt like that was the last realistic chance before he would rise up to it and be able to fight back. And before, I think as Stephen flagged this up, by the time you get down to like final five, final four, everybody wants that person out if they didn't already. And so you end up in like the Hannah Shapiro spot of having to try and make some hipster edgelord move of keeping that person around so that that can be your move instead of taking them out, because you know you won't get credit for that yourself. And to be fair, like by that time, Christian had already come under fire several times. So I don't think Gabby was going to get much credit for that regardless. But I love the gumption of taking the shot, even if ultimately it was fated not to work.
So, Werner, you are hypothetically 2 years from now playing in some international Survivor All-Stars, and you are there and Christian shows up on your tribe. Are you excited about the prospect of working with Christian?
Yes. Yes. I will work with him.
Okay.
I will work with him.
What is Christian 2.0 bringing to the table that you think would be appealing in an ally?
So remember, I, from past experience, I am the type of player that people wants to push out of a game when we come near to the end. And Christian as well. And then he's quite a loyal person. So the thing for me is I have to play and believe that if I get to the end, I win. Okay. So I don't care who plays with me, but give me someone that will play with me. And I actually think Christian's example, he will play with me. I will not be able to play with Gabby for too long because post-merge, she's going to make a move against me. Christian won't. So I'll rather take my chance against Christian in the final two than not getting there at all.
Mm-hmm. Wow, you take him all the way to the end. I'm assuming if you won the final immunity and you could be there against Christian or a total goat, you would take the goat. But you would be hypothetically even willing to go all the way to the end with Christian. That there's no limit to this kind of meat shield strategy.
Well, yes. If I have a decision exactly like you said, I'll take the goat.
Of course. Yeah.
But here's the thing. The way I look at people on the – I don't know if I'm going to arrive there, Survivor Worlds, on a boat or in a chopper or on some other foofy slide. I'm not sure. But when I look across the room of the player, if I see the placement and we start to engage, I'm looking for people who believes they can beat me. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they can.
Right.
I'm taking a stance now to make my point clear. So in my season, there was one or two people that really believed they could beat me. I don't think they can beat me, but they think they can beat me, and therefore they give me their loyalty. If they're suspicious of me, they have to go. So you're asking me, there's Christian, I'll take him. I'll say, listen, are we going to play together or are we going to self-destruct?
Yeah, the reason I ask is I feel Christian will almost certainly be back on Survivor at some point, and a big piece of the success that he will or will not have there, I am guessing, will come down to the kind of other threats from their first time or second time, first two times around, that are around him will stack up to compared to Christian from his first time. Like, I think if he finds himself out there with people like you, Werner, or, you know, with like a Malcolm type, to use like a US example, or anyone yes. kind of in that mold who was a big threat their first time around, like an Aubrey or Cerie, something like that, I think they will see a lot of value in working with Christian. But if he's in like a game changer scenario where he's one of the five big names on a cast that's full of otherwise full of people we wouldn't have even necessarily thought of as returnees too quickly, I could see that being a big, big problem for Christian. But generally speaking, I am optimistic about Christian at least going out there again and having an opportunity to be well received early on. And I'm guessing that he will be doing at least a satisfactory job in that regard once again. I feel like, generally speaking, I am optimistic, arrow pointing up for Christian 2.0. What do you think about that, Dom?
I kind of agree, I think. But let's talk about the manner of his exit this time around, because he went out with a whimper rather than a bang. And as we were getting into this seemingly manufactured confusion going into Tribal, I was thinking, well, clearly Christian's had a pretty quiet episode so far. They would never have him go out, this
yeah.
massive character, the star of the season, in such a fashion, if it really was going to be tonight. So surely he must be safe, right? And then I get blindsided by that. And then I also accidentally, like, spoiled myself with something that wasn't a spoiler, but which still led me to believe he was going home anyway. So that was unfortunate. But I was thinking, surely Christian would have a bigger exit than this if he was going to go out this week and not sometime in the finale. Because I still had him penciled in as maybe losing the fire challenge or being the one who gets taken out just before that because they know they can't let him get there. So for Gabby and him to go out back to back when their relationship was one of the big plot points of the season, did that feel underwhelming to either of you, especially as this is the penultimate episode now? We have the finale next week. Usually this is a time when you want to be building momentum for that episode and getting the excitement going. And instead, it feels like this is going to suck a little bit of the air out of the season instead.
I personally loved it. Mm. Maybe that's a hot take, but I was doing the exact same math you were, Dom, which is we haven't seen anything from Christian since like 8:05. Obviously, he cannot leave tonight. If this guy was the biggest character of the whole season who ended up leaving at this tribal council, surely we would hear more about it. But in retrospect, I love that decision, because with the Christian type, no one who is watching this at home is going to be asking themselves, well, why would they vote out Christian? They just spent 11 episodes explaining why they would vote out Christian in this situation.
Yeah, and maybe I'm trying to have my cake and eat it too, where I want this to be possible for them to do. I want it to be in their range, but I don't want them to actually do it because then it wouldn't satisfy me as a viewer. So maybe I don't even know what I want. Maybe I'm just talking in circles here.
Well, to me, you referenced like their editing range. This is a big episode for me in terms of edit ranges, like range configuration leading into future tribal councils, where the fact that some big character has been invisible no longer means they're locked safe, and that's a big deal.
So I'll ask both of you then, going into this finale, who do you want to win and who do you think is going to win? Because you have one of the big favorites in many people's eyes being taken down. Certainly one of the fan favorites that people wanted to win. And that might be one of these concerns in the end game, where I know, Colin, you are crazy for Davey. I know
Davey is my favy. Get it together, damn. It's Davey.
That too. It can't be both at the same time, okay? either way, Davey is all of our favies. But I don't know how many people out there are really standing for, like, for Allison or for some, or Mike White or some of the other people left in there. So if we end up with like a Kara, Mike White, Angelina final three, or like you can mix and match with Allison in there or whatever, I don't know how satisfying that's going to be for a lot of people. So I guess, Werner, you start first. What do you think is going to happen, and what are you hoping to happen?
Okay, can I start with my hope?
Oh, absolutely.
I'd like Davey or Nick to take it. Team David all the way.
Okay. Is that then, just for the biblical follow through or what?
I like an underdog. We all do, eh?
Well, see, as old friend of the show, very old friend of the show, Gary Wise used to say, that the problem with underdogs is that they suck. And so I think they have to be underdogs in a fun and compelling way. You know, I don't think just being on the bottom by itself makes you rootable. Although the Big Brother fan base seems to disagree on that, so what do I know?
But in any case, all those conspiracies aside, I'd like one of those two to win. Because they've worked hard. They found idols. They tried moves. They played stuff. Love it. But I like all of them. Then I'd like I like Kara, and then after Kara, Mike, and then after Mike, I don't care so much whether it's Angelina or Allison. So Angelina and Allison is my bottom two, but I've got a clear top two, middle two, bottom two.
Okay. And what do you think is going to happen?
I think one of Davey and Nick is going to win. One of them is going to fight their way through up to the final four and make fire. The one who wins the fire will win the season. It's going to be either Davey or Nick.
So do you see these Goliaths banding together to stop that happening? Because with your present company excluded, maybe, it does seem like everyone really, truly loves an underdog story. And with the whole theme of the season being set up as David versus Goliath, and both Nick and Davey are very charming guys in their own ways, then it seems very dangerous to let one of them get to the finals if you can avoid it, because they're going to have this amazing argument they can make for why they should win.
Yeah, I think they're going to all point their guns at Nick and Davey. But then when it comes to the winning of immunities and finding maybe another idol, there might be an occasion where they're going to have to be forced to point the guns towards one another. And I don't know how that's going to work out. If they're smart, they'll take out Mike or Kara, but I don't know how they're going to link up. But I see Davey and Nick fighting their way, one of them, to the final three.
Okay. I certainly would be very much on board with that. Dom, what is your answer? Who are you? For whom are you rooting, and who is going to win, not whom?
I am raving for Davey, which doesn't work, but I'm still doing it because I love Davey and will support him in any way I can. I don't think he's going to take it down. I think he probably gets clipped sometime before the end, but I'd love to see Davey get it. That would be a fun ending to an amazing season. Wouldn't be so hot on Mike White winning it, I got to say. I still don't really understand what the hype is about there. And beyond that, I would understand a Kara win, but I wouldn't be like excited for it. I wouldn't be like jumping up and down, yelling at my TV screen, overcome with excitement. I would respect it as like professional and competent, I guess. Like, you know, there wouldn't really be any fireworks there, even though it seems like she's doing great for herself so far. And then Angelina winning, I know this is maybe my hottest take, but Angelina winning would make this season for me. It would just be the perfect outcome with everything crazy that's gone on. Even understanding that I don't know how well I would get along with Angelina or how well she would get along with me. Just the idea of her, with her history in the game so far, somehow winning her way to the end, Tom Schwartz style, would really tie everything together in a neat way. But
am I the only person who likes Angelina?
I mean, I don't think you are. I think she has a solid band of supporters out there. But Verna, I guess this ties into your experience too, because I'm sure you see people all the time predicting, prognosticating what they think is going to happen. You come from a season where you had maybe the most unpredictable outcome of any Survivor season in living memory. So for you, when you see people doing that, is there a sense that like all bets are off, it really could be anyone? Or does that maybe swing you too far in the other direction where you're kind of gun shy about making any predictions now?
Listen, when we merged, then there was a podcast out there. I think it was Brink of Reality. Or it was Shannon Gates and someone. They said, listen, imagine a world in which Tom and Jean sits at the final two. And I was jogging when I listened to that, and I laughed because what they did is they rated the players most likely to win. And then right at the bottom, they had Jean and Tom. And they said, no chance. And then someone said, but what if the two of them get to the end? They said, what is the chances? And you know what? I just laughed. Who is Angelina winning against?
I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen either. I just don't think Angelina is necessarily as bad as the entire world seems to think.
I mean, who was Tom winning against like before the night of Tribal Council, right? Like, it felt like that came kind of out of the blue too.
Yeah, it is. It's true.
it's a crazy game.
Do we know it's a final three?
We essentially know it's a final three. I feel like when we have.
Especially with six people starting coming into this finale, there's not enough time in the day or in the episode to get down to two people left. And I think that's a shame in a way, because you can imagine the Angelinas and the Mike Whites. If they could see a path to the end that maybe involved taking each other, if there's only one other person that you have to identify and beat, then you're going to be a lot more assertive in trying to drag that person to the end with you. Whereas if you think I can only for sure beat one other person and now I'm going to be in a final three, maybe you just take the safe option that gets you there guaranteed and then let the chips fall where they may. So I think it might be stymieing the gameplay, if anything, to not have that final two to work towards at the end.
Yeah, we say that all the time about how seasons with a final two incentivize aggressive gameplay so much more, like a comically absurd amount more than a final three does. And that is why the fire challenge now being a thing at final four is so, it just makes the game even more, not predictable, but it reduces the variables so much more when everyone knows, okay, once we get to four, there's not really that much else to do other than play these challenges. Whereas in a final two, if everyone knows it's a final two, it is so much harder to make it to the end game reliably.
Yeah. I think what happened in SA, and I don't know if we'll see it here, is that they had two people at the end and they said, this man, we don't agree with everything he said and how he played, but he played with heart. That's what they said. Now, the question is, if you put Angelina up against an Allison and a Mike, is there a way that they said, Mike, he doesn't need the money, and Angelina, you know, the stuff you're saying, you're going on about what you did for the Rise, but let me give you one thing. You never gave up. Is there a chance she sneaks in like that?
Listen, after your season, I am never ruling anyone out from being a conceivable Survivor winner.
Well, Verna, as someone who was there as the front man, if you like, for that jury, did that feel like a live Tribal Council? If John had given a a different argument, do you think the momentum would have swung in her direction instead?
You know, I watched that tribal council on the TV because I was eliminated from the tribal council.
Oh, of course. Sorry, yeah. I'm not trying to rub salt in that wound again. I'm very sorry, but from the second-hand reports that you got.
I'll tell you what. I think my friend Jean did make a mistake to vote me off. She felt very bad because we had a tight bond. And she thought, you know what, maybe my anger would be towards her, but she doesn't understand how I work. I get off the field and I shake your hand, okay? And so I remember speaking to PK still at Ponderosa and said, PK, what do you think? And I was chatting and I said, I know Jean's game has been invisible, but she has been playing because she played with me and we spoke about everyone and we measured up, you know, we draw lines, and then she went and won immunity, you know. And I remember Pika saying, you know what, Sean did play. I'm actually considering voting for her. And at the end, Pika did not vote for her. I was not there to vote for her or to advocate for her if I wanted to. So I think she swung by voting me off. She definitely also lost a little bit of respect because people had the idea that maybe she didn't want to face me.
Mm. Yeah.
But she had a chance. I mean, she was the one that got me out. She was the one that got Tom to vote against me. So she did play, but in some other weird way, she could not pull it through. And she's actually a good communicator. She just focused on the wrong stuff.
Yeah. Werner, before we wrap up with you today, this has absolutely nothing to do with Survivor. I'll preface this question with that, but I didn't want to let you out of here without asking you something, because I watched an incredible documentary a couple of days ago about a musician who has very much impacted South Africa, and I wanted to see if you had heard of him. He's had like zero success in America, but have you heard of a guy called Rodriguez and an album called Cold Fact?
No.
Okay. It was the 70s. It was before your time, but the story of this guy and the way that his music ended up.
Is this the story of Sugar Man? Is it?
Yes. This is it. That's it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The documentary.
So Yes. Okay. So I know about it, but I'm not in it.
Okay, yeah, well, I would say I want to give a tip of the cap to great friend of the podcast, Antonio Mazzaro, for recommending the documentary Searching for Sugar Man. Searching for Sugar Man. It is on Netflix. I was instructed not to Google it before watching it. I didn't Google it, and I was happy about that. And I would say the first 20 minutes or so seem like it's about his music, but there is much more to the story than that. So definitely do stay with it. And I'm glad, Werner, that it is ringing some bells for you.
Yes, it is ringing some bells.
It's an incredible story. But okay, with that kind of needless promotion out of the way, Werner, any other thoughts that you wanted to get out there about this most recent episode or this season of David versus Goliath?
Well, I've got two things I'd like to ask before we go. Do you guys agree that this season is different than a Ghost Island?
Drastically, and so I think this is substantially and different.
And what is it? Is it the people, or is it a different window of a different approach by the production?
To me, it is first and foremost a cast full of people who care seemingly only about coming in first place. It's people constantly trying to take advantage of every single tribal council and not a group of people looking to just follow along with whatever everyone else seems to already be on board with. And I think that is the single most critical element in any season of Survivor is, as I've described it recently, a cast full of shooters, people looking to take shots rather than people looking for reasons basically not to take shots, as it seems like was a very popular casting archetype for a long time. And the second thing and the kind of production element I think you are alluding to, for me, is the edit of the season is so much more balanced than certainly Ghost Island and Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers and pretty much every historic season of Survivor. Like, as we will get into, Dom and I will hop into the edit zone for a little bit after we end with Werner. I think this is the first time maybe ever that there are three people entering this finale where I could easily see them winning this season. The door is more open for me for some compared to others, but I think it is virtually unprecedented that we are entering a finale with three out of five people in there with a serious chance at winning.
Sure.
Yeah, Dom, what do you think about that? What's separating this season for you?
I think it's just a total package, really, because if you look at the cast of characters we have left here going into the finale, a lot of them aren't the most dynamic. Some of them, certain sections of the audience find actively unlikable. But there's just something that's clicking about the way everything is working together. And with the exception of this episode, which maybe does not augur so well for the finale, but aside from this most recent week, it feels like the editing has really been on point in terms of just leading us around in wrong directions, but not making us feel like idiots for having done so, right? We're happy for them to kind of guide us through that mystery tour, if you like. And then when we get to the final outcome, and there's the big reveal, you feel satisfied that you feel surprised in the way that you want to, but also understanding in the way that you want to as well. And it's a really fun season. There are lots of funny moments, funny quotes and sound bites and gifs and everything. And it's just, everything is there. All the ingredients are there. And so even when one part of it is lacking in one week, it's kind of kept afloat by everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the last thing I'd like to ask you guys, do you really think we might see an international Survivor sometime?
I think if we did see it, it would be something like a South Africa or an Australian Survivor pulling from the U.S. player pool and hosting U.S. players on their soil the same way they did with Russell for like 5 days or whatever on Australian Survivor. I do think it is in the mix, given how much it seems like all of these other places with their own versions are at least loosely familiar with the U.S. version as well. I could definitely see that being something. I don't know how soon it would be. I don't think it would be crazy. My mind wouldn't be blown if you said next year is in some international version that Australian Survivor is hosting. That would not blow me away, but I could also see it being a little ways off. But to answer the initial question, I think it is totally conceivable. I don't know how the contracts work or whatever, who is allowed to play in what countries after how much time, but I think that is a compelling idea that I could definitely see some country running with.
Yeah, I think the issue is that so we see various versions dipping their toes in that pool. So Australian Survivor getting Russell Hance over, and he's a big name. You understand the desire to do that, and it might be harder to get a whole international flavor season going. But I think it would have to be one country or one production team really taking the initiative. I don't think it's going to be, okay, we're going to have a tribe of Americans and a tribe of Canadians and a tribe of South Africans and so on. It might have to be, we have a majority of whatever the host country is, but then we sprinkle in a bunch of people from the different versions. And I would be on board with that too. I think that would still be an interesting thing to follow.
I think what we would be looking at is specifically the Australian Survivor team. I know has a lot of people who used to work on the US version and I'm sure have a ton of contacts within the CBS Survivor world. That would be where I would be putting my money for sure, is on Australian Survivor doing a season where it's 10, maybe 10 all-star Survivor Australians, maybe 10 new Survivor Australians playing against a tribe of 10 international all-stars.
Yeah, but you see, the thing with America is there's not a lot to gain for Mothership to do that, because Mothership's already Mothership. You know, she's big.
Right.
And the super fans of America will know, you know, the other versions, but maybe some of the people in America would say, listen, if you want to do something, then rather bring for me a celeb that I know, you know. But if you look at Sanzar, now Sanzar is the rugby name for the competition that gets played between South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, SA, NZ, and AR, SANZAAR. So we have the Tri Nations for many years already playing sport against one another. So in one's mind, you almost see them, okay, saying, and they've been using these words, some of the New Zealand players and the Aussie players and us, let's do a Tri Nations, which then you put, let's say, three tribes of six. I could see, I can almost smell that because we've been there with sport, if you know what I'm saying.
That makes a ton of sense. I was not aware of the SANZAAR element to it, but yeah, each of you has your own active Survivor franchises. That I could absolutely see being in play as well. Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, I think the idea of it is exciting and would work. I don't know how eager CBS would be to bring in people from international versions, but I could certainly see international versions wanting to bring in people from CBS. So I would be very much looking forward to that.
And I would be worried that I didn't know if CBS, especially if these players that vote, you know, are getting sniped over. If they're recent, I don't know if CBS would be on board with that necessarily. I don't know if they'd release them from whatever contractual provision prevents that from happening, because it would still be, it's still Survivor, but it would be on a different network necessarily. So yeah. Maybe because it's a different like TV market, then they're less concerned about that. If you want to go off and do your own thing in Australia, then you do you, and you know, good luck. But I know that would be my concern as someone who. It's very grateful to CBS for putting Survivor on, but questions their motivations a lot of the time.
Yes. We can have the mayor of Slamtown to host the SANZAAR one.
Yeah. Yeah. Who would you want to have on your tribe if you show up for an international Survivor season and you're on like a tribe of six? Who would be the people you would want to be on a tribe with?
From South Africa.
From anywhere. From any of the seasons you've watched.
Oh, I just want to be on the season, but I'd like to see one or two winners there, just to make it interesting. But I mean, I've got some heroes from US. I mean, most of my people, almost got me into it from US. I'd like to play with Kim. I'd like to play with a little bit of Mike Holloway. My early favorite that inspired me was Tom Westman, actually. Mm-hmm. So any face from America that's done well, I'd love to play with.
Yeah, I think that would be a ton of fun. So hopefully just putting that out into the universe is getting us one step closer to making that happen. Werner, thank you so much for taking so much time with us today. Is there anything like Twitter or Instagram or anywhere else you want to plug to let people know where they can catch up with you?
People can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm not overly active. I mostly on Instagram, photos, what's going on at home, what we're up to, a little bit of Survivor. And the spelling, the Afrikaans word that's my Instagram, it actually just says The Real Werner or The Real Varys. And you spell it D-I-Y, like to die. D-I-E-D-R-E-G-T-E, Rechte, W-E-R-R-I-E-S. And that's just The Rechte Varys. And in English, it means The Real Werner.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much once again, Dom. Anything else from you?
No, I'm good. I'm very much looking forward to the finale, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about that. But for now, I'm tapped out, and I'm willing to let both of you out of it.
All right. Well, you're not done just yet, because we're about to do the edit zone right after this.
Oh, but wait. Then, yeah.
But then you'll be done. I guess with that seamless transition, let's send it over to the edit zone.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway,
Michelle Ken,
Brad Culpepper,
David Goliath.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin
Edit Zone.
What are you doing?
Tune out now.
All right, here we are in the Edit Zone. Dom, let's dive in. And as I just alluded to moments ago when discussing the finale with Werner, I really am of the opinion that there are three people entering this finale where if they ended up winning, I wouldn't be totally shocked. And I don't know of a situation in a season past where that has been the case. The closest I could think of was Survivor Second Chance, but even there, we were pretty strongly leaning hard Jeremy with an outside chance of Spencer or Kelly Wentworth. But here, I've got three people who I think have at least 10% equity, to be maybe a little generous in one particular case, but still certainly drawing live. What do you think about that?
Some would have argued Millennial versus Gen X had more than one possible contender going to that finale. Not sure who those people would be necessarily, but I'm sure they exist and are out there. And then Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, I guess if you thought Ben, Chrissy, and Devin all had a shot, then you could have argued that. So I think there are recent examples that could disprove that point.
I mean, going into the Healers, Heroes, Hustlers finale, I was certainly all in on Ben. We had entertained Devin for a little while, but I believe, maybe I'm misremembering that, but I was pretty, maybe not all in on Ben, but feeling very strongly about Ben, whereas in this situation, and I don't even know if this would have been the case last week even for me, but I do still, I feel we are now at the point where I don't know if I have anyone even more than much higher than 50% at this point.
So yeah, I was going to ask, these three contenders that you still have in mind, are they on a relatively even playing field, or is it a case of, well, these two have the lion's share of the equity, and then there's a third person who maybe has 5% if they're lucky, but I can't see a reason to eliminate them just yet.
So let's get into it. Let's dive in with the person I have as my number three person. By, to answer your question, I would say, unfortunately, a pretty wide margin, my number three, and that is Davey, who I'm still willing to give at least 10% to, because I really just feel like the major case against Davey was his essentially just totally invisible merge, which is a super rare thing among eventual winners, but not completely unprecedented among winners. Natalie Anderson, I believe, got like nothing at her merge. Denise Stapley got nothing at her merge. Adam Klein had an actively horrible merge to such an extent that between that merge and the following episode, we said, Adam's out of it. He cannot possibly be the winner. And obviously, we saw how that went as well. So while I may have had Davey hovering near drawing dead for quite a while, I don't at this point have him anywhere close to that. I think Davey's got to have, for me, at least 10%, and I'd be willing to go as high as like 15 or 20 seems even a little too high for me.
Even a little too high for you. Yeah, I just don't see where the meat is with Davey. It feels like he's had a bunch of these fun moments and he's stolen the show a few times, but he has had to steal the show. He hasn't had the show handed to him. And I feel like if he does go on to win, we'd see a much more like holistic treatment of Davey's edit rather than the kind of scattershot stuff that we get at the moment, where sometimes he pops up and he has a few fun moments and then he disappears again. And it's got to be more than just him being instrumental to the story of that episode for all that to tie together for me.
Yeah. I thought Davey was going to be someone who became a big character kind of in the middle portion of the season and got up to some kind of fun, nefarious activity. You know, we were being set up for like devilish Davey, and I thought that might fizzle out and he could easily be gone by like final eight, final seven, somewhere in there. So I'm very grateful that Davey is still in the game. And I do think though that if he can find his way to the end, I've got to feel good about Davey against pretty much anyone he's up against, right?
So if Davey doesn't go on to win, if the 20% or whatever you have him at by the end of this episode doesn't come through,
TBD. I don't know what I have him at yet.
What fate do you see for Davey? Is he going to lose the fire challenge? Is he going to be the one who goes out first in the finale and typically they get a fairly low-key edit? Like, where do you see him going out?
Right. My concern is now that he's the one, it seems, on the outs from this group of five that just split the votes against Davey and Christian, I've got to just be worried that if Davey doesn't find that re-hidden idol or win the immunity challenge, it could easily be him. I think the way that he survives a tribal council naked, to put it in the terms that Werner used, which I thought was great, you know, without any kind of idol or necklace, is if Nick is also there without any kind of idol or necklace. So I would be looking closely at one of those two being the first one gone, with Davey being the heavy front runner to go out first here. But I do not think, to go back to it, that if he does find his way to the end, I'd be looking at many timelines where Davey is anything other than the winner. Like, I think it is in play for me that certainly Kara could be a losing finalist, or potentially Nick could be a losing finalist, but I do feel pretty strongly that Davey is not going to be losing in the finals if he makes it there.
Yeah, I co-sign all of that. So sadly, I think the most likely placement for Davey is probably in that fourth to fifth range. But let's move on to the two people who you do still have in contention. And I don't think anyone's going to be surprised as to who those two people are.
No, I don't think they will either. I have Kara and Nick in some order here. But I want to actually start with you here, Dom. How do you have them ranked at this point in terms of more likely than the other?
I still believe in Kara. I think she's got this. And this might be a case of like the reverse Michelle, where we buy into this despite there being no good reason to, and we've been reaching this entire time. But I think the ingredients are there. And the same logic applies again, I think, is we're seeing a lot more from Kara, even when there's no apparent reason to be hearing from Kara. Like, as far as we can tell, her name has never once come up as a possible boot target. Even in the supposed chaos of this episode, when everyone's name is being thrown out there, Kara's was the conspicuous exception. It feels like no one even has her on their radar at all. And so you would think there would be fewer opportunities for her to talk about, I feel under threat, so I'm doing this, or I'm scared how Tribal's going to go tonight. But it feels like she's also being looped into pretty much every plan. And so she does get chances to say, I feel good about this group. I think this person should be the target tonight, and so on. And so she is there in a way where she doesn't necessarily have to be, but she is. And we're meant to think, I believe, that that's a good thing.
Right. And if this were season 32, I would have all my money in the middle on Kara. God damn it. Now on Kara. Oh, no. Now I'm saying it.
That's why I brought Werner in, just to throw you completely for a loop.
No, I was trying to talk as little as possible during that discussion that I was hoping would be between you and Werner primarily, because I just can't compete with either of your accents. I'm just not on the same playing field as, like, you guys have, like, the Ferrari and the Lamborghini of accents, and I'm, like, rolling in here on a moped trying to fit in, and it's just not working. But to return to Kara, not Kara, I feel like if this were season 31 or 32, again, I would be all in on her. But in the post Ken McNichol era, the door is open for me. Like as I was saying in every season leading up to Ken, show me you are capable of doing this once, and I will at that point have no choice but to leave that as something within your range every season going forward. And to me, it is well within the realm of possibility that Kara is just the girl version of Ken, essentially, as far as the edit is concerned. And what I mean by that, though, is I am not at this point seeing many circumstances where Kara is anything other than the winner or the compelling losing finalist. I think that is the entirety of the range of outcomes Kara.
I would agree, if only because no one wants to vote her out at any point. So how is she even going out in sixth or fourth in the first place?
Well, fun fact, actually, courtesy of friend of the podcast, Matt Ligori, I did not fact check this, so at him if you find that this is incorrect, but I believe it is the case that it is Kara, Mike White, and Nick, I think, is the third person. All three of them have received a combined 0 votes against them this season. So there are many people that are potentially not on radars yet, Dom.
We could, I guess the final four vote might mess it up. Well, actually, no, because we could have a final three where none of them has received a single vote going into the finals. And I guess depending if it's like a unanimous vote, then two of them might leave, never having received a single vote of any kind. Going into that finals as well.
that's very much in play here. That would be quite the statistical anomaly there. But I, to return to Kara and just her overall chances for me, I'm with you. I have Kara still pretty comfortably as my number one at this point. It just feels like we would have taken some time away from Kara getting worked into pretty much every episode, or there would be a scene or two of her at least ambiguously looking arguably bad, like at least something open-ended that could be interpreted as slightly negative towards Kara. But it just seems like we're getting nothing even close to that. It seems like every single time Kara is on the screen. She is looking great and thinking through all of her options, and things are great for her game the way they're going, and that's fantastic for Kara. And you know, I'm sure if she does win, we'll spend a lot of time eventually talking about what how strong a player Kara may be overall. But speaking purely in terms of edit, I just am not able to shake how much we are going out of our way to be told about what a great job Kara's doing and how good things are looking for her single week.
It's weird because we typically think about the winner and the content about them that we get from other people, but as I alluded to, Kara is just not getting that from anyone at all. So it's hard to gauge how she's perceived there. And also that often acts as a guide for the audience on how to perceive that person. So if they see everyone else in the cast dunking on Angelina, let's say, then they're probably going to leave with a negative impression of Angelina if they didn't have one already. Whereas there's nothing to anchor their perception of Kara in the same way. So they're left to make their minds up. And what they see is very inoffensive, but she seems nice. She seems competent. Seems like she's in on the joke and knows what she's doing. And there's nothing really to complain about there. And Kara is, she's never getting the Dodo music, right? There's never any explicit sign that Kara's out of the loop or that Kara doesn't know what's going on. And even when she says something that turns out to be false, there's no flashing neon sign pointing to that saying, "Ha, look at how dumb Kara is." It's always, well, that's just understandable because no one can ever predict anything fully in Survivor. So I see this week people saying that, yeah, Kara, she got a bunch of content, but what that content was her saying, well, Nick needs to go or David needs to go, and that's not what ended up happening. And that's true, but to me, the big takeaway of the episode was no one knew what was going to end up happening. Nick didn't know. That's why he had to play as idol. And he's the other person who's in winner contention after Kara, if you ask those people. So I would say that misplaying your idol and having this whole scheme that you come up with blow up in your face is a much worse look than saying in a confessional, I think this person needs to go home, and then they don't go home. Like to me, those aren't even on the same playing field.
Yeah, I agree. I heard some people talking about Kara having a bad episode last night, and I certainly did not see that. And I thought Nick had an actively bad episode at certain points last night, and you know, in the most meaningful points, particularly at Tribal Council, and they really hammered home just how badly it seemed like even he recognized he screwed up by playing that idol. And it, to me, Kara just continued in what it had been the theme all season. Like I went into the penultimate episode honestly more ready than ever to open the door for the idea that like Kara doesn't have this locked up, and I feel like I was almost looking for reasons to find faults with the things that we were being shown of Kara, and could find virtually none. Whereas with Nick, there was a lot going on that I feel like could be setting up a potentially unsuccessful finale here. But what do we think about just the relative chances and the relative strength of edit, I guess, between Kara and Nick? Is it the case for you as well that this is relatively tight, or is this pretty lopsided in Kara's favor?
I would have Kara decently ahead. The one thing that does give me pause is the possibility that various people have raised of she's in the finale and she gets a bunch of votes, and they feel the need to explain that. And so she ends up as a maybe not compelling losing finalist, but a losing finalist who they need to explain why the eventual vote is so close, but not without making people feel that Kara really ought to win instead. So that's why they're not pushing her in our faces. But she pops up to remind the audience that she is there, and why, okay, you can kind of, if you turn your head and you squint and you look at it the right way, you can see why the jury might want to vote for Kara,
right?
But you're not expecting them to or wanting them to. And that's, I do think that is a realistic alternative that maybe I'm not giving enough credit.
I totally think that's an alternative. Like I said, I think her two outcomes are winner or compelling losing finalist. I think it's one of those two things pretty close to 100% of the time. But let's not forget or understate the power, or I guess the impact, that a 2+ hour finale, now that we're not getting to Final Tribal Council sometimes even until like 10:30, we're like wrapping up Final Tribal Council, that length of time can have on any one of these characters' edits. Like what, like we were talking about earlier with Christian, the audience knows enough about Christian through the first 11 episodes to understand why he would go out in episode 12, and entering each one of these episodes, we're going to have our own kind of expectations for where people are and how the finale is going to go for them. or how that given episode, I guess, is going to go for them. But as things pertain to the finale in particular, because it is so much longer, they can do so much more, I would say, to either build up or break down a character that even though the audience may have been coming into this finale with lower expectations for Kara than anyone else in the entire cast, 2.5 hours later, these editors, I'm sure, can have the bulk of casual fans rooting for Kara to be the winner when the votes are being read.
When we talk about the impact of these early episodes and the edit that someone had in the premiere, it's with the understanding that by the time we get to the finale, 99% of people won't have any clue about that anymore. Right. And it's maybe something embedded in their distant memory that they could dredge up if all of the things connect together in the right way. But beyond that, it's long in the rearview mirror. The opposite goes...
Oh, sorry.
No, is it a pun? Is it a point?
No, it was nothing. It was a separate thing. So you continue your thought, and then I'll just ignore it and go on to my thing.
Perfect. So by the time we get to the finale, it's the exact opposite, where this is the most recent thing that the audience will see, and maybe the only thing about the season that they will remember in time. So if she has a big 2 hours of the finale, that's all she really needs, and maybe all that anyone really needs. And you want the audience going in to at least know who that person is and have some frame of reference for them. But especially when we have 6 people left here. We have final 6, final 5, final 4, and the fire making challenge, and then the final 3. That's a lot of time for Kara to put some good work in and really make herself known.
Right, totally. And in terms of Nick and like the points for him, I feel like one thing I hadn't thought too much about until recently, and this is unfortunately going to probably take some equity away from Davey for me as well, is I was as you were talking about the casual fans not remembering anything from the early episodes, I was going to try to make some joke about how casual Anna probably doesn't even remember fill in the blank, and I was trying to think of something from the premiere, and what came to my mind from the premiere ended up being something I think could be a big factor in the edit discussion right now, which is when those Davids lost the immunity, but in the buildup to that and before Pat got evacuated, the story they were telling is how much Nick is on the outs. And I remember after that premiere saying they could have said this about anyone. They chose Nick for some reason in particular. And with that in mind, that makes me feel better about Nick and thus worse about Davey, who was also on that tribe and could have gotten that same story told about him, but they chose to tell it about Nick. So thinking back about that is now helping me, or is, I guess, now bumping Nick up for me. It's helping Nick's cause for me and moving him up a little bit and taking a couple of percentage points away from Davey. And in particular, just because I feel like when they take such care with that, maybe they would do it to the last David standing no matter what, but it does make me feel like he's slightly more likely to be in there in the finals.
When we look at the two major contenders that most people still have on the board, you have Kara, who is the most generic, like nondescript Goliath, right? She doesn't really tie into the theme of the season at all. Unclear why she is a Goliath in the first place to many people. And then on the other side, you have Nick, who is the epitome of both the Davids as a group and of the season's theme of David versus Goliath. So you would expect if it's Nick who goes on to win, they would hammer that home as hard as humanly possible. And they have been, right? We see these constant references to the theme. And Jeff would do that regardless. But I'm wondering if you think the level of that, let's say Kara is in fact our winner, would we be seeing more or less, given that it's really hard to tie her to the Goliath of Goliaths who overcame all the Davids, or the Goliath who was able to work across that boundary the best and understand who the Davids are as people or whatever? There's no way to tie Kara to the theme in as meaningful a way. So what do you think that would mean for how they treat the theme in the context of the season?
I still think they would hammer the theme because there's going to be some underdogs no matter what. And they're not obviously not all of them are going to win. You're still going to want to tell those same kind of stories. Like I think we saw Christian fit perfectly into the theme, even though it obviously didn't ultimately end up going his way. But no, I was thinking about this yesterday about how Kara winning this season, this David versus Goliath season, has got to be very close to the worst case scenario in production's mind, just on the beach on day one, to have first of all, a Goliath be the ultimate winner. I would imagine that in the dark, they would want a David to win so they could tell the more natural kind of David versus Goliath story. Second of all, you know, to speak frankly about Survivor production, it seems like Kara being a woman is not so, you know, a generic blonde woman on the Goliath tribe who is not overtly a David or a Goliath in any meaningful way is not even close to what I would imagine would be the preferred outcome for production. And to go back to the initial point, it might be the very close to the bottom of the barrel outcome as far as production is concerned. And it seems like, Dom, on Twitter, and I would imagine it's the case on like the CBS Facebook fan page as well, it seems like a lot of people have been saying, yes, I see it with the edit for Kara, but in terms of who I would be rooting for, I think Kara would be the least interesting winner of the bunch. So where are you on that? And not in terms of how likely you think it is, but how satisfying would a Kara win be for you?
Mike White is right there, people. Come on. Like, it's not even close if you stack them up against each other. But yeah, she's not the most captivating personality. She's just calm and composed and competent. And that is, as we say so often, this is a central tension at the heart of the show that makes for great Survivor play and often for boring TV if that's not what you're into. But I also question, because to tie this back to I guess a harbinger from earlier seasons, do you think there's some equivalent of the Seen in Worlds Apart where they you know, they all get out there and we have Lindsay saying the winner of the season is on this mat, and you don't know, like, there's not 100% at that point, you can't take it to the bank, but you can be pretty sure that someone from that Braun tribe was going to go on to win, or from the what were they even called,
Blue
the
collar?
There we go.
I forgot about Lindsay. I literally would not have been, if you had said list the cast members of Survivor Worlds Apart, I don't know how many I would get, but I would not have gotten Lindsay.
That would make a great Sporkle quiz, which is listing all of these Survivor Lindsays from throughout the past 37 seasons. But do you think there's an equivalent to that scene this season? Something which really hammers home that even if it's not specifically Kara or specifically Nick, it has to be a David that goes on to win or a Goliath that goes on to win.
Nothing over the course of the season really stood out to me like that. And frankly, to go back to that season 30 parallel, in the moment, obviously it turned out to be right, but I also didn't just take it as gospel then either. Does anything stand out to you? I remember there being something in, I think it was the premiere, like, it was Nick saying David went on to be king, right? Is that what the one people are talking about now?
I'm not sure, but it wouldn't surprise me. And that is a choice quote that at the end of Nick's winner montage, God forbid, that could be it. That could be the one that's coming up.
That would be the one that would jump out, yeah, in the timeline where Nick won.
By contrast, I'm struggling to think of what would even go into Kara's winner montage to sound like very mundane confessional of, well, I think on this vote, the votes are going to be split 3-2, and this person's going to receive it. Like, no one, there's no... No amount of, like, soaring eagle music in the background can uplift that to where it's exciting, right? It's just, you know, very matter of fact.
I mean, they throw in challenge wins and things of that nature to just generally exciting moments. But and I'm sure there's going to be plenty in the timelines where Kara wins that comes up in the finale that could probably take up that a decent chunk of that winner montage.
What if the thing that cements Kara's win comes in the finale? Because as we said, there's actually a decent amount of game left to be played. And we have final six, final five, final four, and then fire. So like 3.5 challenges left to play. So thus far in the season, we've had 7 different individual immunity winners. The most we've ever had and the most variety among that. So
tied for, just quick fact check.
Thank you.
What season, Dom?
I don't know. You tell me.
I do. I knew this. I would have known this off the top of my head. In Ko Rong, the first 7 immunity winners were all different.
I feel like we must have flagged that up at the time as well.
We sure did. Celebrated it. One of us is smart and remembers it, and one of us is dumb and went to Oxford.
Well, anyway, what was I even saying, Colin? What was I saying? Answer me
because
that.
Of the parody. Because of the parody and challenges, yes. I assume you were getting to Kara could potentially build up a nice lead over the pack if she wins a couple.
She could expand that section on her Survivor resume, hashtag. If she wins, let's say, Final 5 and Final 4, and those are the two most important challenges, and she takes the right person with her and makes the other two make fire like that, that could be the crowning move that the jury gets to see, right? And that's the thing that if the audience has recency bias, so too does the jury, and that could really stick in their minds.
Totally. Yeah, so I wanted to get to a poll that I put up on Twitter after last night's episode, just trying to gauge where the general public is at, or at least the people who voted in the poll, who follow me or get my tweets promoted, not promoted, but show up on their timeline. And I thought the results were interesting, and I'll roll through them here. With I split the options into Davey, Kara, Nick, and then the fourth option is just someone else, just the whole field is option number four. And the field got 8% of the vote, or so far. And this is over a lot of votes. This is 820 votes at this point. So a meaningful sample size, I would say. And
look, Colin, we get it. You have a lot of Twitter followers.
Thank you.
It's fine.
I just needed you. I needed you to say it. And it's at Colin Stone, of course, if you want to get this kind of premium content on your feed as well. But I thought the results were interesting because out of the other three, Kara actually came in last place with only 24% of the vote. It was relatively close. It came in.
Wait, so this is who people want to win or who they think
will
win?
Who they think will win. I said this time next week, who's going to be the newest Survivor millionaire? So who do you think is going to win? Not for whom are you rooting? And Kara
got do you think is going to win? But excuse me and excuse you at the same time. Carry on.
He is or she is going to win. Who is going to win?
Okay, you're right. Fine.
Thank you. So Kara got 24%, Davey got 30%, and Nick got 38%. So pretty close in there, but I was somewhat surprised to see Kara, what I would describe as so low. I thought more people would be on Kara, but I suppose I am kind of in an echo chamber of people who read the edit similarly to the way that I do.
And a solid 8% for someone else. And I don't know if all of those 8% are Angelina truthers or if there's some other theory out there, but maybe that's more than I was expecting. But there's always, like, whenever you hear pollsters, professional pollsters, they talk about the lizard man quotient or whatever, when if you just put a question in a poll saying, how many of you believe that you were abducted by aliens or that the moon is made of cheese or whatever, there's always a solid 4 or 5% chiming in who probably don't actually believe that, but they just like messing with pollsters. Maybe that's the 8% here. Maybe anyone who still thinks Angelina is going to win is can be lumped in that category.
Or maybe someone just doesn't have a strong take and doesn't want to tamper with the other three's results. I don't know. But yeah, I also think there are potentially some Allison believers out there. I don't think that's insane. I feel like I've heard some people believing in Allison.
Do you think there is a case for Angelina? And if there is, how would you make it?
There is no case for Angelina, unfortunately. But I would love for there to be a case for Angelina. If this were season of Australian Survivor or Survivor South Africa, I would say, of course, there's a case for Angelina.
Or South African Survivor? No?
What did I say?
You said Survivor South Africa. I don't know what the official, like, what tagline is or whatever, but
I think it was Survivor South Africa Philippines, which sounded funny, but so that's why I know that one. And then it's Australian Survivor, and you disrespect it by calling it Survivor Australia, which is the exact same thing as calling it Canadian Big Brother,
which is also valid if you ask me, but regardless, I think you put it well. I want there to be a case for Angelina, but I don't think that there is one,
right? So what else, Dom? I guess who's getting the losing finalists kind of edit, as far as you can tell?
So the other thing that gives me pause about Kara, to set this up, is that the only explicit final three that we've had mentioned seems to be Nick, Angelina, and Mike. And none of those permutations that have been floated around, even in this just mess that we had this episode, involve Kara, really. So if she makes it to the end, does that suggest that it's going to be by winning her way there, maybe bolstering her resume in the process by winning those challenges? Or is something going to come together fairly last minute, maybe in the finale, and that's why we haven't seen it yet?
I suspect something could still potentially come together last minute. Maybe she does win her way there, but I'm certainly not ruling out the possibility that people don't stick to everything that we saw come together this week. It seems like one of the most fluid games certainly in recent memory, if not like ever. So out of any group of people entering a finale, I would be more inclined to say that this group out of all of them historically would potentially have a lot of room to mix things up. And any group of people could potentially come together as far as I would be concerned.
Okay. So do you see like an all-Goliath final three forming? Is it going to be a mix of Davids and Goliaths and we get this nice symbolic showdown at the end that I'm sure Jeff is very excited for? What exact makeup of that final three do you have in mind?
I would guess at this point three Goliaths. I feel like Kara, if she wins, it is probably going to be against two other Goliaths. Like, frankly, I think we could be in a situation where Mike White and Angelina are just going to be the kingmakers. And that, maybe that's not going to be the case, but I feel like the Goliaths are going to be the two losing finalists no matter what the combination is. And it's just a matter of the question essentially comes down to, will Nick or Davey even get there?
Okay. So do you could see like Kara versus Angelina and Mike White kind of sniping Nick's spot away from him.
Right. I could see Kara beating any combination of the other three Goliaths, frankly, in the finals. Or I could see Nick or Davey beating any combination of any of the four Goliaths in the finals. I think Kara, as we've talked about, could easily be in there as the compelling losing finalist. That is in play. I just don't think that's the case for Davey, and maybe could be the case for Nick, but I'm not sure about that.
I still don't know what to make of Allison. It baffles me that every single time her name is thrown out there, it's very Spencer Clawson-esque almost, where like every single week, without fail, she is the decoy who never ends up going home. At some point, that has to end, right? And maybe it ends the way it has to end in the finale, when she's in the final three and maybe doesn't get any votes. But is she going to finally come a cropper like at final five or something when... Or maybe she's the one who loses the fire challenge. So there's a few different things in play there.
Yeah, I said last week, I think Allison is either going to be the fire loser or a no vote finalist.
Okay, which of those are you leaning towards at the moment?
I guess I'm leaning towards fire loser just because I really don't know how either of Angelina or Mike White is going to get voted out at this point. I really could see them being the duo that everyone understands is running the show and hoping to get on board with the same way. To me, it essentially comes down to like who will be the Sarah Lacina to their Brad Culpepper and Troy Zan.
I will be very upset if I don't get to see Angelina at Final Tribal. That's to me, that's the one thing that could tie that whole finale together, is just watching her getting roasted by them and then having to defend herself and making her own case in her own like articulate and yet somehow still off-putting to the majority of jury members way.
Well, I think the good news for you is she will be capable of doing that from the seat on the finals side or from the jury bench side.
Yeah, but if it's her on the jury bench, then she is one voice out of 9 or 10. If it's her as a person facing the jury, then at least a third of that is going to be solid Angelina content, and I'm here for all of it.
The question I would have, though, is I don't know how much time they would spend on Angelina, the finalist, when it seems like pretty much everyone there and everyone at home would not be thinking she had much of a chance.
How do you mean?
The same way Troy Zan got basically nothing at that final tribal council. I would be concerned because that could happen to Angelina.
Watching people dunk on Troy Zan isn't entertaining. And, like, I imagine people would have a lot of frustrations to vent with Angelina, and if there weren't, she would be able to draw them out of them at Final Tribal. I think she has a talent for getting those kind of reactions out of people. So
yeah, I mean, I'm certainly with you. I obviously want to see Angelina in there at Final Tribal Council as well. Like, what would be entertainment-wise your dream Final Tribal Council? Angelina, Nick, and Davey?
Angelina, Davey, and could take or leave any of the others, really. Just get the two of them in there.
Okay, yeah, just heads up. Angelina versus Davey, I think, is the most entertaining, yeah.
I'm not kidding when I say that might be my favorite outcome of the season. If I thought Final Two was even in the realm of possibility, which clearly and sadly, it isn't.
I mean, imagine if there was some Final Two twist and Davey woke up on day 39 knowing he was about to go face Angelina at Final Tribal Council. He would be like dancing his whole way through there.
Oh yeah, it would be. And I would love to see Davey Rickenbacker, as he would put it, just waltz his way to $1 million. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He's not gonna hide that out of respect for anything or to not make other people feel aggrieved. He's really gonna broadcast that to everyone there, so I would be there for it.
Yeah. All right, so I guess to give some rough equity breakdowns for me, I am going to go with, give me Kara. I'm going to go over 50% just to make a somewhat bold claim, to have it, to have my, you know, stake firmly in one camp. I'm going to say Kara 55%. I will give Nick 35% and I will give Davey 10%.
Okay. Those numbers don't seem absurd to me at all.
Okay. So you're just going to completely copy me and piggyback and take partial credit?
I'll min-max by adjusting them up 1% up or down so that when it comes in, I can say I was closer and I was right the whole time.
56% for Kara, 36% for Nick, and 8% for Davey.
Perfect. Let's lock it in.
All right. Awesome. Well done, Dom. So I guess I'm fully Team Davey to make sure that those numbers go my way. Anything else this week?
I think, once again, I know I said it with Werner, I was able to get a second wind, as Christian would put it, summon up some fresh hot takes, but I am all taken out for the time being, but I will be sure to replenish those and be back raring to go for the finale.
All right. Well, if you would like to vote in future polls on my Twitter timeline, it's a lot of fun, I promise. I am at Colin Stone. He is at DomHRV. You can email the show, domandcolin@gmail.com. And we have one episode left on Heroes versus Villains over on Patreon. So that complete series will be up in the next couple of days at this point. And we will be on to a new season soon. So if you'd like to support the show and get our weekly bonus episodes every Saturday, it is patreon.com/domandcolin. All right, that's going to do it. Enjoy the finale, everybody. We will talk to you very soon. Take care.
Was it a huntsman or a player that made you pay the cost, that now assumes relaxed positions and prostitutes your loss? Were you tortured by your own thirst in those pleasures that you seek, that made you Tom the Curious, that makes you James the Weak? And you claim you got something going, something you call unique, but I've seen your self-pity showing as the tears roll down your cheeks. Soon you know I'll leave ya, and I'll never look behind, 'cause I was born for the purpose that crucifies your mind. So convince your mirror, as you've always done before, giving substance to shadows, giving substance evermore. And you assume you got something to offer, secret shiny in you, but how much of you is repetition that you didn't whisper to him too?